Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a Closer Look True Crime Podcast, or welcome if you are new. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about a case that is just absolutely crazy. It's a Canadian case, and that is the case of Jennifer Pan. So without further ado, let's get right into today's episode. So the first people we're going to be talking about are Bic and Han Pan. Han, Jennifer's father, was born and raised in Vietnam, and he moved to Canada as a refugee in 1979. Bic, Jennifer's mother, was also from Vietnam and moved to Canada as a refugee around that time as well. The two didn't know each other before moving to Canada, but they both lived in Toronto and eventually bumped into each other. They ended up dating and got married in Toronto not long after meeting. Once they were married, they settled in Scarborough, Ontario, and in 1986, Bic gave birth to their first child, Jennifer. Then in 1989, they had their second child, Felix. Both Bic and Han worked very, very hard for their money and were very avid savers. They both worked at an auto parts manufacturing plant called Magna International in Aurora, Ontario, and Han worked as a tool and diet maker, and Bic made car parts. Another thing about Bic and Han was that they really wanted their kids to succeed, and because they had worked so hard for everything that they had and they didn't get a lot of educational opportunities growing up, they were very, very strict when it came to their kids' education and their studies and everything like that. They were even considered to be tiger parents, which is a term more commonly used in Asia for very academically strict and controlling parents. In 2004, Bic and Han purchased their dream home in a residential area called Markham, and around this time they purchased some very expensive cars as well. They were basically just living the life that they had always dreamed about and were very proud of everything that they had worked towards. Jennifer and Felix were known to be really well-behaved kids who were believed to be very smart as well. Felix studied mechanical engineering at McMaster University, which is a very high-level university, and he did this because Han had wanted him to continue the family profession and be a car engineer. Jennifer was also seen as a very impressive student at the time. She started playing piano at the age of 4, played flute, and was a figure skater, and at the time she wanted to be an Olympic figure skater after high school, but she ended up tearing a ligament in her knee so badly that she had to quit figure skating altogether. But her parents still had hope for her because she was doing fantastic in school, or at least that's what they were under the impression she was doing. But she was actually faking and hiding a lot of her life, including her grades. Her grades actually averaged around a C, and Jennifer would forge report cards to convince her parents she was getting straight A's. The only thing that she really excelled in and didn't struggle with was arts and music, but she also was having troubles with her behavior, and she ended up being expelled from Mary Ward Catholic School, which she was attending at the time. And Jennifer obviously couldn't hide being expelled, so when she transferred to a new school, her parents really started cracking down on her and would pick her up right after school finished, monitor her extracurriculars, drop her off right before the bell, everything like that. And they wouldn't even let her relax at home or talk to her friends because they believed it would affect her studies. Han and Bic also had a serious issue when it came to boys. They were so terrified Jennifer would be distracted by boys, they wouldn't let her have any friends that were boys, and she wasn't even allowed to go to school dances or functions. Jennifer was really starting to feel trapped and stressed with having to fake everything and was just in a really bad place. Around this time, she actually ended up meeting a boy, despite her parents' efforts, who was a year older than her, named Daniel. They both did band together, and in 2003, they were on a school field trip together in Europe for band. And one day on their trip, they were playing in a concert hall that had a lot of smoke in it from smokers hanging out in there. And Jennifer said that it was giving her an asthma attack. She said that she was really feeling panicked and wasn't really sure what to do, and that Daniel had really helped calm her down and, in her words, saved her life. Then the following summer, Jennifer and Daniel started dating in secret. Jennifer also received early admission to Ryerson University, which her parents were super excited about, but it ended up being revoked because she had failed a calculus class in her senior year. However, she didn't tell her parents that it had been revoked and instead made a fake acceptance letter for Ryerson University. So they were completely under the impression that she would be going to Ryerson the following year when Jennifer didn't even end up graduating high school. So Han wanted Jennifer to become a doctor, but she didn't really have the stomach for that, so he settled on her going into pharmacology. Jennifer told her parents that her plan was to attend Ryerson for 2 years to get all of her prerequisites and then transfer to the University of Toronto to finish her degree in pharmacology. Obviously, since she didn't even end up graduating high school because of a lack of courses and not good enough grades, she wasn't gonna go to university at all, but she was somehow able to keep her parents fooled the entire time. She told them that she got in all on scholarships, so they would never have to pay a dime. She even purchased textbooks and took notes from random documentaries and stuff, so if they asked her what she was learning about, she would be able to give them some sort of medical answer. At the time, she was also teaching piano and working at a restaurant so that she could pay for all these books and everything like that. So 2 years went by without any suspicion from her parents, and she was going to have to pretend to go to University of Toronto soon. And Jennifer suggested to her parents that she should move into a female friend's house that was closer to the university so she wouldn't have such a long commute. But I'm sure you're not going to be surprised when I tell you that she was lying about this too. She was actually staying at Daniel's house and not this female family friend that she said that she was, and she was still working at the restaurant during the day. Jennifer and Daniel even found someone online to fake university papers and give her all A's so her parents would never suspect a thing, and it worked. And when it came time for her to graduate from University of Toronto, she told her parents that they only got one ticket per person for someone to come watch them graduate, and she didn't want to have to choose between them, so she gave it to a friend instead, who was also having a similar issue. Then, after she supposedly graduated, Jennifer claimed she was going to be working in a blood testing lab and had a lot of late night shifts, so it would just make more sense for her to continue to stay at this female friend's house, who was actually just Daniel. At this point, her parents were getting a little suspicious though because she didn't have a uniform or a key card for the lab, so they asked if they could drop her off at work so they could just talk to her boss, verify that she actually had a job there. So Jennifer was starting to freak out. She just got in the car, and the only thing that she could think to do when they arrived at the lab was just to run inside and hide in a closet until her parents stopped looking for her and left. So her parents were really starting to get suspicious and decided that the best way to verify what Jennifer was doing during the day was to call Jennifer's female friend who they knew personally. But when they asked where Jennifer was, she obviously was very confused and had no idea what they were talking about. So Bic and Han sat Jennifer down and straight up asked her what was going on, and Jennifer ended up partially confessing. She told them that she didn't actually work at the blood testing lab, didn't go to University of Toronto, and was actually living with Daniel the whole time, but she decided not to confess that she didn't actually graduate high school or go to Ryerson University. Her parents were furious and became even more strict than before. They took away all of her devices, made her quit her job at the restaurant, made her quit talking to Daniel, tracked her mileage on her car, and would only let her leave the house to go teach piano lessons. She felt so miserable and even more trapped than before. She even posted on Facebook in January of 2009 that she felt like she was on house arrest. She tried to sneak out to see Daniel on her way to piano lessons sometimes, but her parents were just more and more strict the more that she did it. Around this time, her dad also gave her an ultimatum that if she didn't go to university and become a lab tech, she would be kicked out. And obviously, she couldn't go to university because she never graduated high school or even went to Ryerson to get the right prerequisites, so she was very, very stuck. He also told her he knew she was sneaking out to see Daniel and said, "If you want to see him, you will have to wait until I'm dead." So Daniel was obviously getting a little sick of this behavior as well. He knew that Jennifer's parents were extremely controlling, but he just said that she came with so much drama and he just didn't see their situation getting any better. So he ended up breaking up with her, and this honestly ruined Jennifer. And to make matters worse, he moved on pretty quickly and started dating another girl named Christine. This made Jennifer extremely jealous, so she hatched a plan to tell Daniel that three men came into her house, attacked her, and that she had later received a bullet in the mail, and that the whole thing was orchestrated by his current girlfriend. Obviously, he did not believe her and just brushed it off. In the meantime, Jennifer reconnected with her childhood peer Andrew, and he ended up telling her in confidence that he once considered killing his dad. And this sparked an idea in Jennifer's head that kind of made her realize that her life would be astronomically better if her dad was dead. She would be able to be with Daniel, she wouldn't have to go to university, she could just live her life, move out, everything like that. So Andrew introduced her to his friend Ricardo, who would be apparently able to make Jennifer's wishes come true. She gave him $1,500 to kill her father, which is definitely not a lot. But Ricardo claims that she was just paying him back for something else and that he never agreed to killing anyone. Fast forward a few months, and Jennifer and Daniel are back together again and are coming up with another plan to get rid of not only Han, but Bic as well, because the thing didn't work out with Ricardo. They decided that they would hire a different hitman. The plan was that they would hire a hitman to get rid of her parents, and Jennifer would use the money from their estate to start her and Daniel's life together. Daniel gave her an iPhone to use as a burner phone so they could talk about anything crime-related, but she still used the Samsung her parents paid for her to use just to make sure nobody got suspicious. Daniel also started talking to a hitman he was friends with named Lenford Crawford, and he said that he would normally charge $20,000 for this kind of task, but because they were friends, he would only charge $10,000. Jen agreed and decided that the day of the murders would be November 8th. Lenford's friends, David and Eric, would also be joining him to help carry out the crime, and it was all set and ready to go. So November 8th came along, and it was a normal evening in the Pan home. Jennifer spent the entire evening watching TV in her room. Han read the paper downstairs before going to bed around 8:30. Then Bic came home after a line dancing class around 9 p.m., changed into pajamas, and watched some TV in the living room. At 9:35, David called Jen, and a few minutes later, the call ended. Then Jennifer went downstairs, said goodnight to Bic, and secretly unlocked the front door before heading back up to her room. Then at 10:02, she flicked the light switch in the study as a signal that she was ready. At 10:05, David and Jennifer exchanged a few text messages and called for a few minutes. Shortly after, the three men entered the house through the front door. One went upstairs to get Han and bring him downstairs. The other one went to get Jennifer, and the last one went and got Bic from the living room. They apparently made Jennifer go around the house and find any money laying around. She found $2,500 from piano teaching and $1,100 in her mom's room. Then Jennifer said they tied her hands together and then tied one of her arms to a banister with shoelaces so she couldn't move her hands or her arms and walk away from the banister. Jennifer's parents were very confused and scared. They were begging for their life and were eventually taken to the basement and shot. When Jennifer heard the shots, she called 911.
What's your name?
My name is Jennifer.
Code is broken?
Someone broke in and I heard shots like pops. I don't know what's happening. I'm tied upstairs.
Did it sound like gunshots?
I don't know what gunshots sounds like. I just heard a pop. I'm okay! My dad just went outside screaming.
Do you think your mom is downstairs too?
I don't hear her anymore. Please hurry. I don't know what's happening.
In the background, we can hear Han screaming, and basically what happened is that after being shot, he regained consciousness, saw Bic dead on the floor, crawled upstairs to the main floor, and ran outside, covered in blood and frantically screaming, just so horrible. Luckily, a neighbor about to leave for work saw Han and called 911 as well and tried to help him. He was taken to the hospital and put into an induced coma and was not doing very well. So the police interviewed Jennifer that night, and it was just really weird.
When you hear your mom come, do you hear your mom in the house?
She was in the house. I had gone down the stairs.
Did you hear? So before this, when did you hear your mom for the first time in the house?
When she came home.
So did you physically see your mom?
Yes.
And at that time, there was no one strange in the house?
No, she was on the downstairs sofa. She was watching TV when I last saw her.
Between that time that you see her and you leave her on the sofa, until you hear the noises, the strange, the voices as you describe them, how long is that?
Maybe a half hour.
A half an hour? Where is it your mom was before here?
She goes dancing every Monday. She goes dancing with a few relatives as well.
What is the first, when you hear this, can you hear them talking downstairs, the unknown voices?
It's all a mumble.
It's a mumble?
Because I had the TV on, it was just all a mumble.
When's the first time that you actually can hear one of them talking?
When he was upstairs, and I thought he had left the upstairs, because I was frozen in my room for a while.
Yep.
Trying to listen in, but I couldn't hear over my TV, and I didn't want to startle them by turning it off or, like, diminishing the volume. So I was kind of pressed up against my door for a while trying to hear it. And I thought that all the people upstairs had gone down, so I opened up my door quietly and tried to peer out, and he saw me, and that's when he came. The only thing I can remember was him, was he had dreadlocks.
Did you see the gun?
I only saw the top part of the gun.
What did it look like?
Kind of, it was black.
Yeah.
And it kind of not triangular, but it was slightly wider at the end. They sit me right at the bottom of the stairs, like slightly out, not exactly directly at the bottom of the stairwell, but just slightly over a little. The third guy, who I didn't encounter, but he was there, he was like, "Where's your money? Cooperate with us." And then my mom's like, you know, yelling and "Don't hurt us," and, you know, "My money's in my wallet. Just please leave my paperwork."
This person, this third guy who you're now describing, do you see him ever? Only as a shadow?
Because he was, there's a wall, partial wall, and he was like right in that vision over my father, but partially in that vision. And the next thing I can hear are them telling my parents to move to the basement.
Okay.
And I'm asking them, "Why? Where are you going?" And my mom's yelling to me, "I want my daughter. Why can't my daughter come too? I want my daughter."
Who goes down to the basement? Can you see that from where you're sitting?
My back is towards the wall.
Do you hear anyone else in the main level where your parents were? Like, you can hear, if people are trucking down the stairs, you hear your parents going down the stairs. Do you hear, like, five sets of footsteps going down there, or can't you hear that?
I was just such a distress. I don't exactly know how many people went down.
And one of the things that was really puzzling to them was how she was able to call police when her hands were tied behind her back into a post. So while in the interrogation, they asked her about that.
Stand up and turn around. Put this in the side that you believe it was in. Great. Turn around so that only you're looking away from me. You're looking exactly like, now here is where the banister is. Put your hands back behind your back, exactly how you remember they were, okay? Now, and are you restrained from movement? How far can you move your hands from the banister?
They tied my upper arm.
Yes.
Around the banister.
Yes.
But my hands were bound together.
So your hands bound together, and this is the arm that's the strings wrapped around against the banister?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now how can you get to the phone, and how do you make the phone call? 911.
Mm-hmm.
And do you talk down like that?
Yes, I'm yelling at the phone like this.
And how can you hear?
I turned the volume on max.
Yes. So that's exactly the way that you're talking to her against the railing.
Bick's funeral was held shortly after, and police were so suspicious of Jennifer at the time that they had a secret undercover agent spying on her at Bick's funeral, and this agent reported that she didn't show any emotion at all and was just acting extremely strange. And I know that everyone processes grief differently, but her behavior was just so weird and very suspicious under the circumstances. So at this point, everyone in the community was starting to get suspicious of Jennifer. The police were secretly surveillancing her a lot, and the story was starting to fall apart. For one, it was believed to be a burglary, but the keys to Bick's Lexus were sitting on the counter and weren't taken. No electronics or jewelry was stolen, and there was still a lot of money around the house that they didn't take. Plus, it didn't make sense why the burglars would leave a witness alive after killing two other witnesses in the house. They also didn't have a crowbar or anything to help them break in and just walk through the unlocked front door. Eventually, Han woke up from the coma, and although he was in really bad condition and had been shot really close to his head, he remembered everything from that night. He said that he remembered Jennifer talking to the men like they were friends, and that Jennifer wasn't actually tied up at all and was just walking around the house normally. So they brought her in for another round of interrogation and started putting the blame on her to see if she would end up cracking. Eventually, she did and ended up saying that she was depressed and her life sucked and that she wanted someone to come kill her, but they got confused and killed her mom and dad instead. She said that she was just too scared to kill herself and for anyone to know that she was thinking of killing herself, so she'd rather die tragically. Police immediately arrested her and figured out who she was working with the old texts on her phone and calls, and arrested them as well. She did throw away her old SIM card, but there was still a few things on the burner phone, and they were able to recover a lot of it. And everyone went to trial on March 19th, 2014. The trial lasted almost 10 months. Jennifer was on the stand for 7 full days, and there were over 50 witnesses brought in. Since police had found text message proof, her only defense was to pretend like she had hired them for a different reason, which didn't fool anyone. She also claimed in court that she had tried to cancel the whole plan, but they wouldn't cancel, and they said that if she called it off, she would not only have to pay the $10,000, but give them more money as a cancellation fee. But obviously this argument was pretty weak because there were hundreds of messages on Jennifer's phone from the day of the murders, plotting out how it was all going to go. Jennifer's lawyers also argued that her tiger parents had been abusing her for years and she had just snapped and was not in the right mental state. But Jennifer, Daniel, David, and Lenford were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for 25 years, and they were all sent off to different facilities across Canada. As for Eric, he didn't get charged at the same time because his lawyer was sick, so they scheduled a retrial, and in 2015 he took a plea deal for 18 years in prison if he pled guilty to everything, which he did. However, he did pass away from being stabbed in his cell in 2018, which is a whole other thing. As for Jennifer's dad and brother, they requested a court-ordered protection so Jennifer wouldn't be able to contact them, and the judge honored this. Jennifer was also banned from having any contact with Daniel or any of the other people involved in this crime. Ever since Bick's murder, Han has just become a whole different person. He was just so riddled with anxiety, depression, and PTSD. He isn't able to work, couldn't sleep, and in one of his only statements to the public, he said that he hopes that Jennifer realizes what she's done and that she can become a half-decent human being one day. Felix ended up wanting to get away from the whole thing and move to the East Coast, and yeah, this is just an absolutely insane case. I can't believe that Han survived the murders, and I'm so glad that he did, even if he's really struggling and wishes that he didn't now, because without his witness statement, I don't think the police would have found the holes in Jennifer's case nearly as soon as they did. They were always suspicious of her from the beginning, but it was only after Han's statement that they really started questioning the whole story and he kind of busted it all. Anyways, thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope to see you next Monday for another episode on A Closer Look True Crime Podcast.